Outside the box, starting from the middle this time. Today's topic is Origin 2, T-O-O. When many of us think of the Global South, we think of nations with a lot of poverty, India and other Asian countries, all of Africa and Latin America. And we may think, they just aren't developed like us in the West. We industrialized, they didn't. We don't have corruption like they do. We're democracies. Most of them aren't. But as I noted in a previous Outside the Box, Jason Hickel's book, The Divide, suggested that poverty in the Global South began centuries ago and is the result of exploitation by Europe and the U.S., not because of bad decisions by countries in Africa, Latin America, and Asia. In the 1950s and 60s, European countries in the U.S. used secret agents, weapons, and the fear of communism to overthrow governments trying to address issues of poverty and exploitation by the West. Such countries as Brazil, Guatemala, Iran, Indonesia, and the Congo might have been more successful economies today if they had not been the victims of Western-sponsored coup d'etats. But the real enslavement of many economies came through debt following the post-World War II establishment of the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, IMF. Hickel calls efforts to orient economic benefits toward working people and poverty reduction rather than towards the wealthy as developmentalism. But the World Bank and IMF, despite assurances of promoting policies to address poverty, were against developmentalism. Instead, they lent money to countries initially to help those nations to pay balance of trade deficits. Because of high interest rates, borrowers got behind in payments and began spending more and more of their money in interest rather than to benefit their populations. Meanwhile, Western lenders like banks were getting high rates of return on their investments through the two lenders. The World Bank and IMF began mandating what they called structural adjustments, minimizing the amount countries could spend on their own people while maximizing payments to lenders. If countries began defaulting on their loans, the U.S. government stepped in on the side of lenders, pressuring nations like Mexico, Brazil, and Argentina to pay up or else. Trillions of dollars flowed from nearly bankrupt countries to bank lenders. Structural adjustment also required that countries denationalize their economies, privatizing water, electric, and other utilities. They had to open their economies to multinational corporations, extracting natural resources and producing imports using cheap labor, making it hard to develop local industry. National budgets required austerity. Little was left to help their people or create a locally based economy. Hickel lists various countries whose populations in poverty increased significantly in the 1980s and 90s. When leaders of impacted countries spoke out against these structural adjustment programs, they were ignored or criticized, or in one case, assassinated. Despite the World Bank's motto of, quote, "Our dream is a world free of poverty," end quote, neither the bank nor the IMF has reduced poverty one bit. From 1980 to 1993, poverty in Latin America increased from 40% to 62%, caused in large part by falling wages. But it's been a boon to Western investors, providing about $10 trillion in investments in the Global South, along with corporations who've set up businesses in those countries or moved production from the U.S. and Europe. The Global South is beginning to overcome this era of exploitation, but poverty and inequality remains a major problem. Every government seems to want to benefit only itself at the expense of other nations. However, former colonies may eventually unite and throw off the yoke of debt and exploitation. Some are calling for climate reparations as a result of rising oceans and horrific weather events, despite creating little of the greenhouse gases causing climate disruption. Just like poverty in this country, which many blame on individuals for so-called bad choices, we also assume countries that are struggling are at fault for their lack of development or industrial capacity. Where do you think the fault lies, and what can be done about it? I'm Larry Danziger, hoping an end to national debt will benefit the entire world.